The opinions you love. The history you crave. This is Rant EM Radio.
Every time you look at a pair of scissors, do you think of Psycho Sid and Arn Anderson? We do. So listen to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks with Phil Rea, the Impact Player.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Player, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
I don't know what's up with you young kids, man. Ladies and gentlemen, from the current to the way back, you're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast on the Rant EM Radio Network, on the Shining Wizards Network. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I'm always joined by
the pillar of the black community, Black Powers.
Black Powers. All right, well, it is the sad end to Black History Month.
Yeah, I wish you could go all year round. I could listen to Tupac all day.
I don't know the stigma with you young kids and fucking Tupac. I think he's awful.
You know, he's the poet laureate of the 90s.
That would be Biggie Smalls. But if you want to have this,
listen,
first of all, what good hip-hop besides Naughty by Nature and Redman come out of Jersey? What do you know about hip-hop?
I know KRS-One.
All right, that's the Bronx. Okay.
Well, Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. What do you know about hip-hop? Hip-hop, to me, because I grew up right in the mecca of it. Ironically, how much I hate Tupac as a rapper, I think he's incredible as an actor. I think he was awesome in Juice. I think he was great in Poetic, yeah.
Yeah, Poetic Justice.
Poetic Justice, and I thought he was really good in that movie with Jim Belushi. He was like a cop or some shit. I forget what it was, but either way, he was a good actor. I just did.
He was better than Bobby Brown in Ghostbusters 2.
I watched Ghostbusters last night on Netflix.
Rest in peace, Harold Ramis.
Yeah, rest in peace, Harold Ramis. I didn't even know he was almost 70 years old, man. That's crazy shit.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, man. Yeah, and ironically, Stripes was on Sunday. Have you ever seen Stripes?
You know what? That's just one of those movies that just keeps escaping me. I need to see Stripes.
Dude, you have to see Stripes. If you don't have it, if you can't get it, let me know. But
yeah, one thing, I need to see some of these pay-per-views on the network. Have you been able to actually watch a full pay-per-view?
I watched a third, maybe 97% of November to Remember 1997, which was Bigelow and Douglas for the belt. Pretty significant pay-per-view. I apologize for my voice. I'm pretty shot. I'm getting over this crazy cold. The pay-per-view itself was it was the biggest crowd they've ever had up to date. Mm. It was in the Golden Dome in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So it was Douglas's hometown. And at that point, Bigelow had just split from the Triple Threat. They were recruiting Lance Storm at the time. And this was very significant because Taz won the TB title that night from Pitbull number 2, I think it was.
Yeah.
So pretty significant. I get to the whole fucking card. I get to the main event and it freezes on me.
I had that happen with an NXT episode. I'm like, okay, you know, a lot of the pay-per-views aren't working. Because what was it? I was trying to watch Wrestle War 91.
Right.
And it freezes on the fucking Buddy Lee Parker match. I'm like, come on. This is like the first match. Let me watch something.
Right.
Same thing happened with the Flair Piper MSG show and the NXT episode. I was like, okay, you know, it's an hour. It can't be that bad. And it fucking froze up on the main event too.
Right. And ironically, because I was home from – I was sick home from work yesterday. I was – what do you call it? The live stuff, like the network commercials. I mean the network –
the network, actual like, network itself.
The network channel. Itself works perfect.
Yeah, that works fine.
Right. And I watched that all day. I watched NXT. I watched the Legend stuff, which was really, really good.
Oh, I woke up this morning to they had like 293 episodes of Raw back to back. How cool is that?
Yeah. And they had the Wrestling Classic on, which I was so pissed because
when did they have it on?
They had it on it's under 1985.
It's part of the live
no,
feed.
It's probably not, it wasn't part of the live feed. But if you go and you know, it went to one match, which was the opening match, was Kolb Kirshner versus Adrian Adonis, and then it went to Nikolai Volkoff and the Bull and Davey Boy's Dynamite Kid.
Dynamite Kid, yeah.
And with that, you know, with the 2-minute drop kick.
Yeah.
And I'm telling Michael, I'm like, yeah, watch what happens. This is funny. So as he's doing the Russian national anthem, it fucking froze on me. I was so pissed.
Mm.
So, but yeah, there's some network snafus, and it was kind of expected. Dave and I spoke about this briefly a couple days ago. Listen, when you have 10 million people signing up for it at the same time, I'm sure Netflix had this problem too.
When they first started. I'm sure it's a brand new system. They're rolling it out. They got like millions of wrestling fans tuning in at the same time, you know, trying to watch everything. I'm not totally surprised. I'm just glad that there's a live feed that you can watch, even if it is like the same shit over and over again. It's still fun.
Yeah, just, you know, I have a very impatient 6-year-old who has a Kindle, and he's like, you know, he opened it up yesterday, and he was like, I want to watch Money in the Bank. So apparently he, you know, and I tell him, now he's navigating himself through it, and he says to me, he's like, oh, this is great. And they kept freezing on him, and I felt bad, and I had to explain to him that, you know, it's a computer thing. It's not us. And I mean, I'm sure it'll all work itself out. And for the people who didn't get it or were skeptical about getting it, you have a week trial. For the haters and for the people who just don't want to do it or afraid to do it.
And the Mike Noren dongers of the world.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, I wish I had a videotape collection as big as Mike's, because apparently he has everything that WWE has, except his is original. Mm. So whatever, dude. If that's what tickles your tits, then go ahead. I think the setup is fantastic. I mean, I know it's going to freeze a bit. Again, it's a new system. If this happens 2-3 months down the line,
a problem.
It's a problem. And then, you know, I'm sure either WWE will address it and whatever. This is why it took a year and a half. Like I was telling you yesterday, it took a year and a half for them to get it off the ground, because it's not just an easy fix to upload your entire fucking library. And it's not even their entire library.
No, this is just a fraction.
This is just a piece of what you're going to get, you know? And they have to – you had to expect some snafus. You had to. And if you didn't, you were very ignorant.
Yeah.
You know? And if not, listen, a week, you get a week. So at least entertain it. You could stream it off anything off your – any streaming device. I have Apple TV. We know a couple of guys who got the Roku. I know Double A from the Rant got the Roku, working well apparently. I streamed it off my phone the other night, except if on my way home from work during Raw, but I couldn't watch it because you guys kept, you know, commenting on Facebook, so it kept interfering with my feed. But again, this is a no-brainer if you're a hardcore wrestling fan. If you like the old stuff, if you dig the new stuff, and you missed it. If you like NXT, if you like the Roundtable, which the Roundtables were fantastic.
Yeah. And those are from what? The 24/7 on-demand?
Yep. They were on demand. Now, I missed like two of those. So, I mean, I saw almost all of them. So, I'm pretty lucky. Yeah.
But it's good to, you know, not have to go on fucking, you know, YouTube and watch it in parts.
Yeah, it's another thing too, man. It's like, you know, people are like, oh, I want the original music. I want the original this. I want the original that. I hate to break it to you, but, you know, some of the music is great. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'll miss Demolition. But I have all that stuff. Like, the stuff that I don't mind, I already have. And you know this. Like, a good example. I just pulled up my original WrestleMania 2 video cassette.
Mm.
So if I miss anything...
Clamshell case.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have it in my basement. So, I mean, like, you know, it's definitely a relic. I could put it on DVD, and if I miss anything, you know... And you're watching it all in high definition. It's like...
But that's like another thing. It doesn't really matter if you have the VHS or the DVD version or the network version. They're all different. Like a lot of those events, like WrestleMania 2, were edited, you know, for videotape. You know, not necessarily the songs, but some of the matches have been edited. You know, for instance, I got a big gripe with the Coliseum Video WrestleMania 7 VHS because they edited the Savage Warrior match. This is like one of the main events, and they edited it.
Right.
So, you know, not everything's going to be perfect. You know, if you prefer the VHS, then, you know, cool. But, you know, you're going to have like a full HD quality version on the network. You know, not to put over the network, but I own it. And, you know, it's a big deal. It's a fucking huge deal.
It is a huge deal.
That you can watch WrestleWar 90 or Starrcade 91 whenever you want to.
Again, I have no problems with it. You know, I have no problems with it at all.
Yeah.
If you were to tell me last year that, you know, this was going to happen, I still would have bought it.
Yeah.
I still would have bought it. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. They're going to figure, you know, whatever they need to figure out, you know, for all this. It's just a matter of time.
Right.
Well, I know it could be fixed, and we could just be talking shit, and we don't know that it's fixed already.
I gave it a rest last night. I was, I'm on cold meds. I'm fucked up anyway, but I watched it for the entire day. I didn't leave my couch.
Mm.
I was just like, okay, this is fun. And I got to see some good stuff before it froze on me, you know. But, I mean, again, it's at your disposal. You're not digging for tapes. You're not fucking... worried about the videotape jumping or, you know, 25-year-old tapes. Yeah, some of them don't.
Videotapes will wear out in time.
They will. They will. And I have, you know, I have some really good, decent tapes, you know, and so did you. But again.
There's some stuff that we couldn't convert because it was so beat up.
Yeah. And you're going to have that problem. So here's the deal. And again, if you're a hardcore wrestling fan and you dig the old stuff, and you don't want to pay for pay-per-views anymore like now, just pick it up for a week and give it a try. I don't know what else to tell you.
We could talk about the ROH New Japan.
I was going to get into that. Yeah, let's do that real quick. I have my news articles here. Hold on a second. Give me 1 second. They have a working agreement, I think, for two shows. Give me one. There's my notes. I apologize. Ring of Honor announces a partnership with New Japan Pro Wrestling. They're going to do two must super shows for pro wrestling fans. ROH operating officer Joe Koff revealed a pact with Naoki Sugabayashi. Am I saying that right?
Sugabayashi.
Okay, I'm getting better. The president of New Japan for the first ever ROH during the Honor Con, which went down this past weekend in Philly. Global War is going to be May 10th in Toronto. And then, of course, Dave and I will be at the War of the Worlds May 17th in the beautiful Hammerstein Ballroom in Manhattan.
I haven't been to an ROH show, period. I don't know, like since Daniel Bryan was there. having a I forgot who the fuck he was facing, but you know, Kensuke Sasaki was wrestling there too with somebody else against the Briscoe. So it was a while ago.
Yeah, no, I went to I went last August with Uncle Eddie from Ham Radio, and we had a blast. We were third row, and it was awesome. That was the debut of the Outlaw Inc. team, Homicide, and the hell's his nuts, Eddie Kingston.
There you go.
So, you know, again, Cobb said, and I quote, "We're very excited to announce this unique partnership to our great fans as we experience unprecedented momentum in 2014 and demand for ROH events has increased." They just had their 12th anniversary over the weekend.
That's incredible.
"We responded by planning two huge shows. New Japan is a fantastic partner with exceptional wrestlers, and we look forward to giving fans once-in-a-lifetime experience with two stacked cards showcasing the best wrestlers in the world." You can go to Ring of Honor, you can, and New Japan's website, which is in English too. If you go to the newjapan.co.jp/English translation, and you can do it like that and watch the press conference. Again, I was going anyway, but now now it's more of an incentive, and now you're probably going to go, which is pretty cool. So
yeah, absolutely, because it's you know, it's just rare for these guys to come around. They did come around. What was it? I don't remember what year it was. It had to have been like 3 years ago. You know, they did a New Japan tour with Fat Frank from Jersey All Pro. You know, setting things up for them here. And it was fantastic. It wasn't the best quality because they couldn't bring all the New Japan guys over. But, you know, they had the first Intercontinental title tournament down here. You know, they made a big deal out of it. It was fantastic. So I can only imagine now that they're hooked up with ROH. You know, granted, this isn't a full-blown New Japan show. But, you know, as we have come to expect from Ring of Honor in the past, you know, they know their shit. They know how to put stuff together where, you know, the fans would appreciate. So I can only see some dream matches going down during that weekend, you know, featuring guys like Okada and Tanahashi and Nakamura too.
Well, I know
simply off the hook.
I know Nakamura's already confirmed, and I think Tanahashi's confirmed as well.
Mm.
Again, good stuff. If you're a fan of the Strong Style, if you're a fan of Ring of Honor, then definitely go check out those shows if you're in the Toronto or the New York City area. It should be a good time. And if not, get them on demand because it's going to be a great DVD to own.
Yeah.
Or video clip to own. Speaking of Jersey All-Pro and Jersey Championship Wrestling, Jake Roberts is going to be there on March 14th, but he has a bit of a health scare. It was confirmed last week that he had a cancerous tumor growth behind his knee. The tumor is the size of a half dollar. It's growing into his muscle. And he confirmed it requires emergency surgery, which he had yesterday. He was tested for cancer after discovering the growth last month. He says, and I quote, "If the devil can't defeat me, cancer doesn't stand a chance in hell. Pray for sick children who face this horrible disease because the snake will be just fine." Again, he's slated to be at Jersey Championship Wrestling March 14th, and he'll be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in New Orleans on April the 5th.
Yeah.
So, Jake, we love you. Get well. We're big fans of yours. And, you know.
Well, according to his Twitter, he said the surgery went well. He's feeling good. Doesn't know when the test will come back to find out if the growth is, you know, all removed. But I'm sure Jake will be A-okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he'll be all right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he'll be okay.
But cancer is now just becoming like a regular thing for, it seems like, everybody and anybody.
Well, it depends. You know, as a medical professional, it depends on, you know, how early you catch it and what kind of cancer it is. It could be just routine stuff. But if not, then, you know, it could be very, very fatal.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he's already ahead of the pack and hopefully it didn't spread. So, all right. So, Sunday evening, you were very active on the Facebook page.
Yes.
With
and Monday too. Monday, I wasn't even for Raw. Like, I wasn't there for most of that. Everybody just started jumping right into it. So that was pretty fucking cool to see that.
All right, you want to get into the card real quick for the chamber, and
let me pull it up first because I don't really.
Well, I have the card. Do you remember all that?
Yeah. Go through it.
All right,
so people don't hear me typing.
No, that's fine. I pulled it up. I'm not. You know, I'm halfway prepared anyway.
Yeah. I'm more prepared for Ron Simmons and Ernie Ladd.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Good throwback this week. All right, so your Elimination Chamber pay per view opened up with Big E defending the IC title against Jack Swagger.
That was really good.
I enjoyed that. Again, I just Big E Langston needs something. I don't know. I mean, he's a big guy. He can move. I think he's is it me or is he just missing something? I don't know.
I agree with you. I still enjoyed his performance, but I see where you're going. You know, he's right now he's just like a big black generic dude. You know, I could tell from, you know, hearing him talk, you know, there's something there. It's not fully developed, but it's there. It exists. And it's, you know, he can have access to it if he's willing to get out of his comfort zone a bit. Because right now I feel he's a bit, you know, playing it safe. You know, when he was in NXT, he's doing the five count, you know, doing Bundy's five count. There's only one man who should be doing
that.
There's
only one man who should be doing that. Yeah, I don't like. But
yeah, and especially nowadays, you know, things have changed so much since the '80s that you don't have to fucking rehash, you know, fucking King Kong Bundy's gimmick or anything like that. You know, I honestly don't believe in the 7-year cycle rule that what's his name, Cornette. You know, brought up. You know, people do remember that stuff. They remember it fondly. You know, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they're fresh to all this. That, you know, maybe like a kid like Mikey or whatever is watching this. Doesn't, you know, he may not know all that there is to know about King Kong Bundy, but that information will gradually get to that person. And it's kind of like, I don't know. I think it's just kind of cheap. You know, with how the world is today, how people are. With so much, you know, things that have advanced since the '80s. Come on, you could do something better than a five count Big E.
Yeah. All right. So Big E retains the title after the match. Bad News Barrett comes up on his podium and he says, "I'm afraid I got some bad news for you Americans." To no surprise, Russia's won more gold medals than you at the Olympic Games.
Yeah. Again, that's like doing like Nikolai Volkov or Iron Sheik's, you know, gimmick from the '80s and stuff right. like that. Come on.
For me, good
cheap
match.
Beats. Yeah, cheaper than me.
Cheaper than Dave. That's exactly right. The next match was your tag team title match. New Age Outlaws defending against the Usos. The Outlaws retain the belts, which I think is fantastic because now you build up the Usos for Mania. This is actually one of the first times in a long time that I'm not dogging WWE for storyline, you know, for nice classic story build-ups, you know.
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of, you know, hunger, you know, for these guys to sate, you know, to get when they get those titles, you know. If it's just like, okay, like, you know, a lot of the fans, like, want these guys to win that belt. But if you just drag out the process just a little bit more, you know, it's awesome. It just makes it that much better. And
you're absolutely right.
And on Friday, and I mean not Friday, on Monday with Raw, you know, with I watched the last hour of Raw on a secret website. But what was it? You know, they fought to what, like a double DQ or something like that. So just, you know, just getting the story right along, and I'm sure that's going to be another Mania match. Hopefully not on the pre-show.
Yeah, well, they'll put it on Mania because they normally run a 4-hour show, which is pretty cool. Again, this is perfect. And besides Billy Gunn needing a haircut, they still can go in the ring.
Yeah.
And now you're building up this young team with the Usos with a, you know, Triple H is promising everybody a tag team division. Not much of a tag team scene lately. I mean, you split up the primetime players. You know, you split up the other, all these other teams, and now it's, you know, you have the Shield, you have the Wyatts who are engulfed in some other shit now. But now you build up the Usos, which I think is fantastic. So they're gonna probably win the belts at Mania. So
yeah.
All right. Speaking of primetime players, Titus O'Neil defeats former partner Darren Young.
I didn't even watch that. I actually stepped out, and by the time that I got back to the TV, the match was already done.
Right. Next match was probably the match of the night, the Shield versus the Wyatt family.
Oh, wow.
This is pretty good. I won't go into the whole match, but at one point, Roman Reigns hits Rowan with the Superman punch, and then he hits Wyatt with one, and then Reigns backs up in a corner, smiling, looking down at Wyatt. Spear to Harper instead. Wyatt with a tackle to Reigns, and then Wyatt hits the Sister Abigail, his move there for the win. And again, this is a nice build-up. I don't know what they're going to see in terms of the Shield. A breakup is is imminent, but I don't know.
Yeah, that just goes with the territory, especially nowadays. But it doesn't seem like it's going to happen as immediate as, as WWE is prone to do with a lot of their stables and teams. It seems like there may be some life to it for now.
Yeah, I mean, for now. I mean, it's, again, they're looking to push Wyatt into the main event stream, and now with him and Cena, it looks like that's going that way towards Mania. We'll talk about Mania in a minute. Let's see. Divas match. Do we care? Let's see. Del Rio versus Batista.
Wow.
Yeah. Did you see any of this match or no?
Yeah, I saw this match. I just thought it was incredible that the fans were just relentless with the Batista chants and just booing the shit out of them. And I know that they're going to be having Batista on Raw to address the fans, which I'm guessing they're going to turn him heel. But I thought that was interesting because everybody knew a big chunk of the reason from Rumble with the backlash with that was, just the hardly any use of Daniel Bryan. But now, he's in the main event at Elimination Chamber, and with the potential that he could possibly win. That was up for grabs there, but so Batista, for the Rumble, got the shit boot out of him, and now he's in a match just with ADR, and it's the same thing. And luckily, they wrapped it up pretty quick. Match was okay, nothing spectacular, nothing to go into any further details about. But just the fan reaction was the highlight of that match, in my opinion.
I'm disappointed at the way Batista looks. He looks terrible.
He looks hard up.
He looks terrible. I mean, in the ring, his facial features. I think he got some plastic surgery done or some shit.
Like some sort of Botox or something weird. I don't know.
Dude, he looks god-awful. And I'm just disappointed. And then he loses clean on Raw the next night. What's that?
Who'd he lose to? I didn't see
he
that part.
He lost to Del Rio.
He lost to Del Rio clean.
Yeah. So, I don't understand the concept of you're giving this guy a huge push for a main event at the 30th WrestleMania, and then what? He looks terrible on his pay-per-view match, and then he looks even shittier losing clean to the guy he beat the night before. So if you want to sell me on the 50-50 booking, whatever, I'm fine with it if he wins next week. But what kind of fucking validity is that if it doesn't come down to that?
I don't know. I think we've all gone down the road with the 50-50 booking before, and it just doesn't work. It's just frustrating.
And I've said this before, and I told this on our show, on the Wizard show, and whatever show else I call in on. 50-50 booking only works if you're telling a story. Now you have a story. Now you have a build-up to WrestleMania. And if Batista does do something next week, you have to win now. Because you look like crap the night before, and then you job. So even though the 50-50 booking was in effect, technically, you look like shit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. Of course, the network's being plugged at this point, every single aspect. And your next match was the Elimination Chamber match. Here's my beef before I let you rant on it.
Okay.
I couldn't watch all of it. We had a family emergency in the house. Averted, thank God. But perfect. I finally got to watch the rest of it. I'm not a big fan of this thing anyway. I don't like it. I don't like the way it's structured. I don't like the way the match goes. I don't like the results the last couple of years. I'm just not a fan of this gimmick at all. It's by far, for me, the worst gimmick they've ever had. Gimmick match, I should say. Worse, yes. Even worse than the Tower of Doom, which was in the NWA.
That was NWA.
But here's my thing. Now Randy Orton winning the thing, I thought Cesaro was the star of the show. I thought Cesaro had a good strong match in terms of who he worked. I mean, the stuff with Cena was great. At one point, he threw Cena up in the air and connected that European uppercut. That was fantastic.
Amazing.
He's never a bad act, Cesaro. You know, even as Claudio and Ring of Honor and PWG and Chikara. I love his work. I'm a little disappointed. I'm a big Christian fan. I just didn't see him in this match. Like, for me, it lost translation with me. I don't see him in this match because he's not back long enough, I don't think, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel the same with Sheamus. Just these two guys. Just, I don't know, they seem kind of out of place. And I guess for guys like us, you know, we've seen them in so many different incarnations, and none of them have really been all that great. Well, except for Christian, you know, his earlier years. But, you know, I'm talking about the maybe the last five plus years. It's, I don't know, these characters, I don't know. For instance, you know, Christian, they gave him the World Heavyweight title. And then, like, what was it, like that SmackDown, like the following week, it was done. For me, it's just kind of like either use the guys right or just don't use them at all. It's just for me, it's hard seeing guys, you know, like Christian or Sheamus who, you know, I know that they do have talent. There's something to them. And there wasn't even a good spot with Sheamus during the Elimination Chamber. But it's just kind of like it's just not consistent. That's my problem with the WWE. A lot of things are just not consistent.
Right. And let me just – I want to talk about Daniel Bryan real quick. And there was a lot of comparisons being thrown around on the internet and on other shows. As a matter of fact, Steve Corino made a mention of it on the Wizards podcast too. I heard it with Don Tony. I heard it with a bunch of guys. And I read it some internet articles. Daniel Bryan is getting a similar push like CM Punk, where, you know, they build him up, build him up, build him up, take him down. Build him up, build him up, build him up, take him down. I don't know if they go with that same route. I don't know if management doesn't want to recognize his star potential and how much he's so over right now. We're to the point where they copyrighted the Yes Chance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with Bryan losing every single other match. Again, if it's 50-50 booking and you're booking it properly, and then he actually wins the Big Cheese at the Big Cheese, which he's not even a part of at Mania. Now they're talking about him in Triple H at Mania. That I have a problem with.
Yeah.
You know, if he's not winning the belt at WrestleMania, then I'm not sold on anything he's done since SummerSlam. Is that safe to say, or am I just being delusional as an old school?
No, it's safe to say because, you know, how many times can you give the guy, you know, variations of the company's title and take it away and not let him have his time, you know? Orton's had his time, Triple H has had his time, Batista's had his time, Cena's had his time, all of them. To really not let, you know, Daniel Bryan rather, have his time. I don't know. And how can I word it? Just what a lot of people are saying, you know, there's going to come a time where, all the hype is just going to die down and it ain't going to matter what the hell they did. Cause you know, you either got to pull the trigger at the right time or not. And, yeah, that's just how it goes.
So, you know, the Mania card right now is not looking good.
No.
And you had Batista and Orton for the 17th time. Now they're apparently the headlining Mania. Now apparently they're pushing towards a Triple H, Daniel Bryan match, and I guess the Usos and the New Age Outlaws for the belts. This is what I feared, and I don't know what the logic is right now with creative. You know, if you're not utilizing the talent to the potential of the event, you know, you want to make this event more over the top. Now you bring Hogan in the next night.
Yeah.
And it was so anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Like, he got the huge pop. It almost felt like he was out of touch. And I said that when he first made his debut in TNA.
It's like WCW all over again.
Well, no, because in WCW, at least at the time, they needed that.
Mm.
You know? I can't compare it, but I'm comparing it to his run in TNA. Because when they brought him in, it was like, oh my God, Hogan's coming. Everybody popped for it. And if you
but the ratings didn't match when they had him when they had the was it Impact and Raw at the same time. It didn't
exactly
pan out.
So, you know, they bring him back and then follow it up with the Del Rio Batista match, which sucked, and then the Orton angle with him and whatever. Like, they followed it up with the crap, and then you bring Taker back to fight Brock Lesnar. Now, I said this for months, that if they would, if Undertaker wasn't going to fight Sting, you know, I want him to fight Lesnar.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with this match at all. But since my only problem with it is, and I've said this too before, is that Brock Lesnar is not on TV every week.
Yeah,
so
he wasn't even on the pay per view the night before,
right? Because he's not. He gets paid by appearance. He has one of those contracts. So my whole deal is, you're gonna main event him. Well, not main event him, but you're gonna put him in a big spot, in a Mania spot with Undertaker with the streak, and it's almost again anticlimactic because he's not there all the time.
No,
at least with The Rock. The Rock made appearances where he didn't wrestle. The Rock was on satellite with Brock, not so much. And yeah. Brock is nowhere near the big name that The Rock was.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, you're going to have to sell me this story in the next 6 weeks. Why is it so cool that Brock is fighting Taker? Why? I mean, you know, I want to see it. I like the match. I just want to know why now. Now tell me a story. Explain to me why this is supposed to happen. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
I feel just as depressed as you are. It's just, you know, just the fact that we knew this was coming like several months ago, you know, turns me off. And just the buildups that they're presenting to us isn't intriguing. It's not alluring. It's not entertaining. It's, you know, there's definitely plenty of ways to do something. You know, like the Brock Undertaker thing, even though we all see it coming, you know, there's just ways of, you know, doing it the right way. And, you know, I felt with Raw, it was okay. But again, to your point, you know, both guys just aren't on TV enough for really this, you know, to, you know, simmer and, you know, bake at 350 degrees properly. You know, it's just being rushed. It looks rushed, and there's no feeling. There's no heart in it. So how am I going to be excited for that at WrestleMania in 6 weeks?
Yeah, that, and I was a little disappointed with Raw that they didn't give any mention to Big Daddy V.
They had the Men on a Mission rap on
the network. Yeah,
on the network. That's about it. But
yeah.
But didn't they do like a crew member, like a 10-bell salute or something like that for a crew member recently?
Yeah, well, apparently this Friday they're gonna do a tribute on SmackDown.
Okay. You dropped the ball on that.
I don't know, but the guy who repeat another news and notes, the Bulgarian guy, Alexander Rusev.
Yes.
The one that reminds me of Ivan Drago with his manager.
Yeah.
They're going to be he's not going to have an in-ring debut until Mania.
Really?
Yeah. So
I guess that's a decent debut because I tried catching up with NXT on the network and I saw him defeat Hunico as Sin Cara.
Yeah, if you're around tomorrow, I got to work until 10, so I'm going to miss that NXT pay-per-view.
Mm.
So you should check that out and see if we get a couple of guys. I know a couple of guys on the Facebook page.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching it tomorrow night for sure.
Cool. All right, so hopefully.
Because I've really enjoyed NXT in the past whenever I could catch a match on YouTube or something like that. Well, listen, NXT and FCW, there was always like a buzz around what was going on for those shows. And, you know, as I mentioned in the past, you know, it's on Hulu. I don't have a Hulu account, even though it's free. Particularly NXT, I wasn't always catching them. So that's just like one of those word of mouth shows that always manages to produce something, you know, excellent. You know, there's plenty of NXT episodes that I've been watching that, you know, they're okay. There's nothing too grand or special about them, but they do have those excellent moments, like the 2 out of 3 falls match with Cesaro and Sami Zayn.
Yeah, that was great.
And the other matches that they had leading up to that were fantastic as well. So I can only imagine that their match this Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time for NXT Arrival is going to be nothing short of amazing, as well as the ladder match between NXT champion Bo Dallas and Adrian Neville, who we all know as Pac.
Yeah, I met him last year at the airport with Matt. He's a nice guy. Here's my thing, too. Do you think... Are you happy with the progression of NXT now that you've seen this? Do you think it's going to be a lot more now with the exposure of the network and everybody who doesn't have Hulu, with the internet savvy fans, do you think there's going to be a boom of guys coming up now, or is it still going to be all political and
Oh, it's going to be all political for sure.
Yeah.
But I believe that, you know, now that fans can watch NXT whenever on the network, you know, brings more attention to them, and it'll give, you know, just cause for fans to voice their opinion as they have been, you know, as of late on the shows. Because, you know, we all saw Raw. That was
terrible.
It just seemed like everybody was drained. The fans were drained. The wrestlers were drained. And this was coming off of a hot pay-per-view. You know, how could that happen?
Right.
Especially with Hogan on. I thought, I had a feeling, you know, something like this would happen with Hogan, but... at the same time, like, he's in WWE. That's where he belongs. You know, as far as I'm concerned, and a lot of people are concerned, but I was kind of disappointed in, you know, his performance on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
It just seemed like, you know, like the fucking, like those keychains where you press the button and it says some sort of stupid phrase. It just seemed like that, you know? Where somebody was pulling a string on the back of Hogan and like he was just saying his catchphrases. There wasn't much to it, you know?
All right. Well, there you have it. I mean, it's...
That's your WrestleMania.
So far.
Yeah.
So, and speaking of WrestleMania, Hogan's going to be the host. Piper said, he interviewed Piper yesterday, and he was like, well, Hogan can host it, but I'll have Hogan on Piper's Pit. How cool would that be?
Yeah.
We're going to see Piper on March 8th, so maybe we'll get to ask him.
Yeah, we got carte blanche at
WPW. Yeah, we'll talk about that at the end of the show. Not much else going on in talks of news. I know Tigre Negro from AAA and CMLL, he's going to be debuting on TNA. He'll be Tigre Uno. If you don't know, that means Tigre 1.
Mm-hmm.
Someone bought lockdown tickets and they were advertising Sting. They wrote back Sting is not with the company anymore, so that's good to know.
Card subject to change.
Exactly. So, and that's pretty much it. There is nothing else significant in news. I think we covered everything. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into our call of questions?
No. We covered as much as we could. There's nothing. nothing too crazy going on this week other than what we mentioned.
All right, let's hit the Foch book.
Foch book?
Yeah, Foch, that means face in Italian.
Oh, okay.
Foch book.
Well, isn't there an Italian word for book, too?
Foch de Libre.
There you go.
Let's see. All right. Basil wants to know, was Ron Simmons a modern-day junkyard dog? Yeah.
Yeah, well, was it? You did the interview with George Klein. Yep. That was kind of like what was what Bill Watts's, you know, frame of mind was. You know, he always wanted to recreate that moment with Junkyard Dog. And who was it? George Rivera asking, you know, that saying that he never won, you know, the company's top title. Technically, he did, because for Mid-South, what the title was, the North American Championship, and he won that four times.
That's right.
So he did win the top title for that, but it was governed by the NWA. So technically, the NWA belt is the top belt, but for the Mid-South territory, he did win the top title, and it was a huge, huge deal over there. So, yeah.
Eric wants to know, Tom Zink, underrated or not?
Absolutely. Well, no. I don't really have much of an opinion on Tom Zink. The guy never really amounted to too much. He was okay. I enjoyed him with teaming up with Brian Pillman in WCW. But obviously, you know, all the attention went on to Brian Pillman. So Tom Zank, he's just, for me, he's just an okay guy. I know Eric is probably just bullshitting with us, trying to get us to talk about Tom Zank on the air when Tom Zank doesn't deserve air to breathe. So that's my answer.
He's a lifelong tag team wrestler. I thought him and Martel were a good tag team. I would have loved to see him as a heel. You know, a lot of these guys don't have that charisma to carry themselves over to from a good guy to a bad guy.
Tom Zank was just like a guy. That was, yeah, that was his gimmick. He was a guy.
Yeah. Let's see.
There's no Tom Zank promos that stand out for me. I'm sure Eric will find something for us.
Scott wants to know, after watching Cesaro and Sami Zayn, Cesaro made him tap out with a chin lock. He goes, what the fuck? I've never seen that before.
I think this is just a prime example of how a great worker Antonio Cesaro is, where he can make something like a chin lock or a headlock, you know, believable.
I am so happy that Generico, who's now Sami Zayn, has, like, he has, I don't know, he's not just a guy under a mask. He actually has a personality.
Well, that was the big thing, you know, when I got started with Beyond, you know, El Generico didn't sign to, he was still El Generico all over the place, PWG, ROH, Chikara, you know, thrilling the nation. But a lot of talk amongst the guys was, you know, like, he'll probably never get his ROH title or whatever because he's got the mask on, you know. As much as, you know, to us, the fans, it's not a big deal. You know, we love him as he is. But, you know, the brass, whether it's ROH or WWE, it's like, if you really want to go somewhere, you can't, you know, be a luchador. The only reason why Rey Mysterio is around or Sin Cara as well is because these guys built a huge following on their mask. And El Generico, to a degree, he did, but not to the same degree as, you know, Sin Cara or Rey Mysterio Jr.
I like the new Sin Cara anyway. I like him better than the old one, the guy Hunico, the guy that they, you know.
Well, that's the strange thing. I, you know, when the original Sin Cara was going around the world as Mystico.
Mystico, yeah.
He was fantastic, you know. He built his brand well. But when he came to the WWE, I guess the guy's ego got the best of him, and just nerves maybe, because he wasn't performing the way that he was, you know, in New Japan or CMML. I don't know what to say. For me, it was very strange because there was huge hype on that dude. And for him to come to WWE and be botching left and right, you know, first of all, that's just unacceptable, period. But for this guy who had a lot of grace to his style and, you know, was grounded as a luchador, I don't know what the hell happened.
Here's the thing, too. I don't know if, you know, a lot of guys who have that, you know, that personality with the work rate, sometimes sometimes it doesn't, it's not what they're looking for. Good example, the Wolves, who just won the tag team titles last week in TNA.
At a house show.
At a house show in, like, West Virginia, I think it was.
In front of how many people?
Probably like 12. But, you know, those guys have some kind of personality. Again, just it does sometimes it doesn't – it's not what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Chris Hero is another good example. Guy had everything. Chris Hero was the – him and Cesaro, Claudio, with a Kings of Wrestling. They were fantastic. Again, didn't turn into what they thought he would be. They're looking for a certain thing. I'm hoping that doesn't happen to Sami Zayn. I hope he gets a push. I like him a lot. I always did. His stuff with Kevin Steen was amazing.
Yes.
Ring of Honor. If anybody who goes, you know, who just watch that last match they had in December of, I think, 12, the final battle. Not this one. I just passed one before that in 2012 with the fucking pile driver on top of the ladder. That was amazing. All right.
Another good case in point, you know, his match with the 1-2-3 kid at Chikara's King of Trios.
That's right. Yes, I totally forgot about that. Good point.
You know, I was there for that. I was at the fucking Beyond table, you know, watching this shit go down. We were actually sitting right next to Generico. He had his little gimmick table right next to us. And, you know, a lot of people gave, you know, 1-2-3 kid credit for that match. But it was all Generico. He was man orchestrating this and, you know, making sure that match was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And if you weren't there live or if you seen it on DVD, I don't know how the DVD presentation was, but once it was done, once the fans were done chanting, you could hear everybody in the back of the ECW arena chanting and yelling and screaming and clapping for those guys. Like, the boys were doing that. Absolutely phenomenal. You know, this guy certainly has that potential, you know, just as much as Cesaro does. And if he doesn't make it to a world title scene down the road, I don't know what to say. The man has it all.
Yeah. All right. I got a baseball question next to me. I guess I'll answer it real quick.
baseball.
Yeah. George Rivera wants to know, do I like the Granderson signing and do I think he thinks he'll hit 40 or 45 home runs in Citi Field if he's healthy? I disagree. The ballpark's way too big for Granderson. He'll just get on base a lot, maybe 20, 25 home runs for the Mets. And I picked him to win 80, 85 games this year. So we'll see how that turns out. Baza wants to know, amongst the excitement with the launch of the network, clues regarding Mania, did anyone notice the passing of Nelson Frazier? Yeah, we already discussed that. They're going to do a tribute on SmackDown. Let's see. Okay. We have Hogan hosting Mania, Orton and Batista, and Taker and Brock. This is an old-ass sounding theme song, said Scott. Can you say this year's theme is a retro? Yeah, and Dave, and you actually responded with, smells like grandma.
And I'm sticking to that answer.
Yeah. Yeah, we mentioned that before. Again, it's, I don't know. I'm hoping that they fix it. Let's see.
You would think that they're aware of what's going on and the reactions that they're getting from, you know, fans and the internet and everything about what people's perception of WrestleMania is going to be. You know, it doesn't. And again, you know, these guys can have great matches. You know, we've seen it time and time again, but it's just we've seen the same match over and over again. Why do we want to see it again?
Right, and the final discussion before we get into our throwback this week, which was an excellent idea, and I think we spoke about this prior to us going live because we were doing like a throwback theater type thing where we would watch old movies and matches and critique them while we watch them. But Scott had an idea that we select a pay-per-view from the network and we all watch together, call in with our dissection. He said, you guys already thought of this, but it would be fun once a, you know, like a month or so. And then, again, the network we didn't discuss, but the whole thing with watching a movie or a match was definitely discussed. But now this puts a whole new twist on what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Once we get the whole live timing thing, because you have to understand, Dave and I decided to do 2 hours, and there's no other show after us, even if we go 2.5, 3, depends on the network if they let us. I don't see us doing that much of a show anyway. We normally do 2 hours anyway. Now it comes down to that between the current stuff and then the throwback and if we have a guest on. I think it's cool. I don't know if we can do an entire card. We would have to just not do anything current. We'd have to just do the entire pay-per-view in one sitting. So, yeah, that'll be cool every couple of months. Maybe towards the summer. Maybe we'll do like an old SummerSlam or a Great American Bash or something summery, you know?
One thing that I see on there that I really want to do a show on in the future, because it was like one of the first like NWA WCW things that I ever saw growing up, and that's the Bunkhouse Stampede.
From 1988, I watched it at work on Monday when it didn't freeze on me. But that was – and I told you this when we first started hanging out, that Road Warrior Hawk and Ric Flair is one of my favorite matches of all time. So we will definitely do the Bunkhouse Stampede. That's not. That's definitely one of the things we'll definitely do.
Yeah.
But what we'll do is we'll Dave and I will dissect a couple of the ones that we really want to do. We'll throw them up on the Facebook page. We'll have you guys vote on them. And whatever one gets the most votes, we'll do that one first. Just to make it more interactive with the fans. And
yeah, because, you know, you guys are posting shit up on the group page, which is excellent. I'm loving the selections from Zabaza, who's the one that's normally putting them up on there.
Yeah, the throwbacks of the day. That's
pretty cool. Yeah, and Eric, too. He's been putting up some stuff, and they're fantastic. Man. And you guys got good taste. You got good taste in podcast listening. So we definitely want to know what you guys want us to talk about.
Yeah, I just want to make a correction to you guys. Last week you put up a Steve Regal, Jim Garvin clip. Steve Regal and Steve Kern are not the same person.
They look like they're the same, but they're
not. Steve Kern was Skinner. Steve Kern was with Stan Lane. They were the Fabulous Ones. And Mr. Electric Steve Regal was with Jimmy Garvin in the AWA. So so you guys don't get that twisted.
So you get your Steves all in a row in correct order.
Right. I think that's it. Let me just give me 1 second before I don't want to miss anything. Oh, yes, one more thing. We got 4 entries to our rebook The Undertaker streak. Dave, we have to come up with the definitive time when we want to stop with the admissions to that. I mean, you want to give it till Mania, you want to give it till the end of the month, end of March.
You know, let's give it till Mania.
All right, so you have till Mania. We have 4 of them so far. Dave and I will pick the best ones, the best one, I should say, and you'll get a nice prize. Maybe a T-shirt, maybe a DVD, something out of me and Dave's closet, because we have some big closets now.
Or maybe you'll get Steve Kern as a gift.
They will send you Steve Kern suspenders. and his bow tie, but
a top hat
and a top hat, right? Well, that was the Fabulous Ones too, right? Did they wear that stuff? Okay, all right. So here we are. It is, like I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, it is the last Wednesday in February. Only 28 sad days.
Yes, the last day of last throwback for the Black History Month.
I want to talk about the big cat, Ernie Ladd, Dave.
One of the best. My favorite guy's on the mic.
Yeah, here's the thing. He passed away in 2007 at the age of 68 years old, Louisiana native. 6'7", I believe he was, 300-plus pounds.
I thought he was like 6'9".
Let me see here. Let me see.
Yeah, according to the Wikipedia, he was 6'9".
6'9", 300-plus pounds. First of all, he went to Grambling State, which is a huge football football stomping grounds for African American football players and former football NFL MVPs like Doug Williams of the Washington Redskins. He was a defensive tackle. And I want to talk about this football thing. I know you're not a big football guy, but the football thing is important because before the National Football League, there was the American Football League, and there's a huge history with the American Football League.
Yeah.
The Jets and the Raiders. More importantly, he played with the Chargers, the Oilers, and the Kansas City Chiefs. He played 112 games. He was a four-time AFL All-Star. He won the AFL Championship. I believe with the Chiefs, he was a first-round draft pick by the in the NFL by the Chicago Bears, and a fourth round, I should say, a 15th round in the AFL, and he was on the 50th anniversary San Diego Chargers All-Pro team. He was a Louisiana native. He started wrestling in 61, I believe it was.
Yeah, it's like a special attraction.
Right, because he was a big dude. He had knee problems, which why he didn't play, which is why he's not an all-around. Yeah, he had a bit really bad knee problem.
Which is why all these guys also turned to wrestling too.
We talked about that last week. A lot of guys didn't wrestle because they liked wrestling. They wrestled because they wanted to make money.
That's where the money was. And, if you listen to a lot of these guys, even there's like a, quasi shoot interview with Brody, the dude's just talking about football for most of the part. And what was it when we had Emerson Murray on, when he was talking about calling up Bill Watts, he's screaming at him over the phone because he wants to watch football. It's like, why are you calling me?
The funny thing is, normally guys who were over at that time were good guys. In Ladd's case, he got more over as a bad guy. He came in as a good guy in 69.
Yeah.
Came in as a good guy, and he was – and then became like one of the most hated guys right after the 70s, and as well as one of the first black wrestlers to play a bad guy. That's why he was more over.
Yeah.
He was – and his promos, like Dave mentioned on Facebook, were incredible. Like, he riled up guys all the time.
Yeah, he knew how to rile up guys because he would bring out, things about them that was
politically correct nicknames.
Yeah, politically incorrect nicknames. Like, call – like, do shit that I do. Call people out on stuff that may or may not be true. Like, what did he call fucking Mr. Wrestling a criminal because he wore a mask?
He called him the mask varmint.
Yeah.
He called Wahoo McDaniel a drunken Indian.
Yeah. And he said he was that one that I posted on the group. He said he's sending Tony Atlas back to Africa.
That was awesome. You also had the tape thumb like Morocco did, like, claimed it was a football injury, but it's not. Sort of like what Orton did with his cast. He would, when he was in a lot of trouble, he would just walk out of a match and be counted out. They actually named it the Ernie Ladd. Like guys getting mad and not liking what's going on, he'd walk out of the ring. And in some social circles, it was called like a dusty finish. I'm doing an Ernie Ladd.
Well, the dusty finish was like the whole, flip-flopping who the winner was.
Right. So the Ernie Ladd was you walking out of the ring getting counted out.
Yeah.
That was your way of a dusty finish.
The black version of a dusty finish.
Right. The Black History Month version of the dusty finish. All right. Ladd wrestled for a lot of promotions. He went to the WWWF, was managed by Ernie Roth. You know him better as the Grand Wizard. It was natural progression for him anyway. His feud with Andre the Dummy, or the Fat French Fries, he called him.
Yeah.
Was my favorite stuff with him.
Yeah, I was trying to find a match for that. I couldn't find a thing.
Yeah, Ladd was the king. Was the first king actually, before they ever crowned the king. He was the king, and he was the big cat. Ladd had some great matches with Bruno in the Garden.
Yeah, there was there's actually one on YouTube via WWE, which I was able to scrounge.
Yeah, that was one sided though.
What's that?
Bruno totally dominated that match though.
Yeah, it was kind of strange watching that one, especially just you know, as powerful as Bruno is, you could tell that, you know, Ernie Lack had just wrecked this dude.
Right, he was just put
whenever he was good and ready to.
Yeah, he challenged Pedro Morales, Bob Backlund. The IWA had a bit of a run in New York, and he lost a 2 out of 3 false match to then Mil Máscaras. And then another match took place in Roosevelt Stadium in Jersey City. I've never been there. I don't know what.
I never even heard of the Roosevelt Stadium.
I don't even think it exists because I was in Jersey City a little while ago and I never even saw that out there.
Yeah, unless it's like been dead and gone for years, but I've never heard of it.
So here's where it gets interesting. He leaves WWF, and he gets to Mid-South. And right away, they throw him in the mix. We spoke about my Love Jones for Bill Watts and his booking.
Yes.
Put him right in there with guys like Ray Candy, JYD, and Paul Orndorff.
Well, he was one of the dudes, you know, according to George Klein and Greg Klein in his book, you know, that he was being considered by Watts as, you know, the guy that he was going to push to that JYD level, but you know, Ladd at that time was a little, you know, too old to really grab the fans' attention, you know, before they went with JYD.
Right. My thing is, too, I mean, he actually managed the Samoans. He was in a tag team with Leroy Brown in the early 80s, which was very successful, actually. That was probably his best run as a tag team wrestler.
Mm.
And then, of course, the whole development in booking Junkyard Dog was Ladd's influence on Bill Watts.
Yeah.
Again, one of the baddest dudes on the planet was bad in football. He was bad in wrestling. You don't get that anymore. Guys that were double tough, you know?
Yeah, they were legit tough.
You know, guys now have this they're comfortable in their skin. They'll take the big pay cut and do mid-card stuff. And that just didn't fly back in the day. You know, you had to earn your spot. You had to apply yourself. You had to, you know, be everything you could be and display that in the ring every single night. And being an African-American at that time was not a good deal. And
it's triple tough at that time.
It was super triple. Yeah, exactly. It was triple tough.
No, triple tough.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There, you know, so Ernie Ladd overcame all that. He would, you know, his stuff with Gorilla Monsoon was fantastic. He was a great color commentator too, because like Dave mentioned earlier in the description, he could talk.
And actually, that's how I knew about Ernie Ladd. I remember hearing him on a lot of the Coliseum videos doing commentary as a color commentator. Get it?
Fucking maniac.
But yeah, like I really enjoyed the way that he was able to get over the talent that was in the ring. He was able to really describe a person, not just you know, not just by tearing them down like he did in the past, accusing them of false allegations. But, you know, he just had this thing about him, especially that voice of his. It was very kind of like Morgan Freeman-ish in a way, where it was just precise. And whatever he said, you know, you listen. There was that respect that carried over into his tones. And, he did his facts well. And just a very believable commentator.
So he retired from the ring in 86 due to, again, severe knee problems. Big Republican. I didn't know this. He was a big
friend of the Bush family.
Friend of the Bush family in the 2000 campaign. I didn't know that. Owned and operated Big Cat Ernie Ladd's Throwdown Barbecue in New Orleans until 2005 when Katrina destroyed everything in that state.
Mm.
He was a friend of Jim Ross. I knew that. He also appeared in an episode of That 70s Show. Entitled The Wrestling Show. He was in the locker room with The Rock.
Who
played his father, Soul Man Rocky Johnson.
Yeah.
And he was also a basketball coach in Franklin, Louisiana. Died again in 2007.
He died again twice.
Well, he died. He mentioned that I mentioned he died in 2007, at 68 years old. But he had colon cancer. He got diagnosed in 04. Told him he had 6 months to live, but, you know, again, that didn't happen. He lasted a couple more years because he was a tough dude. He had a wife of 45 years and four children. Cauliflower Club inductee as well. The NWA, he held, I mean, almost every regional title where he was. He was also a tag team champion with Bruiser Brody. Florida, Southern, Georgia, Brass Knuckles, Texas, California, three times, Louisiana, North American. He was the North American champion one time in Mid-South. On and on and on and on. WWA, he was Puerto Rican champion once, and that's pretty much it. I mean,
yeah, this dude made the rounds.
Let me ask you something. If, again, we're going back to 85, would you book Ernie Ladd if he was of age? Would you book him in a spot in 85?
Well, if I remember correctly, he was a part of the old timers battle royal that they had. What was it, an MSG or a Meadowlands in 87?
Right.
I'm
saying if he was young enough, would you book him?
Absolutely. Right. In a heartbeat.
Yeah, I would too.
His character is very timeless. If you watch, you know, his wrestling style wasn't the greatest, but it did fit with like 1985. But the mic skills, oh my God, like just watch some of those promos that I put up on the group page. I'm going to put them on the main page as well, you know. But there's just something about like the way that this man talked. Like he made things personal. He sounded belligerent when he needed to. Just to piss off the fans, like just the way the man talked. He was the dude who inducted the Junkyard Dog into the Hall of Fame back in 2004.
Yep.
And man, that speech that he did still gives me chills. I would absolutely book him. 85, even now to a degree, I would book the dude.
I'm gonna go on record and say that although Andre the Giant's my favorite big man of all time, Ernie Ladd is a close second. He's the only guy out of all the big men that can talk and walk it. Like a lot of guys were, he just wasn't an attraction. You know what I'm saying? He can legit wrestle. He could talk, like Dave mentioned a few times already in the podcast. He killed it in promos.
Yeah.
And he was believable. Again, just a talent. I wish I could appreciate him more as a young wrestling fan, but I couldn't because of the time and his age and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and it's amazing. Like even his watching a lot of the matches on YouTube now, it's just funny seeing him doing the big boot and the leg drop before Hulk Hogan, and the man is just timeless. That's all I got to say.
Okay. Well, that's pretty much it on Ernie Ladd. Dave's going to put up the clips on the page later on to coincide with today's show. And hopefully I'll have this show up by tonight, hopefully by tomorrow, because there's so much going on. We're going to end our Black History Month with our, I guess next to Ernie Ladd and JYD, our favorite African-American wrestler, my favorite anyway.
Yeah.
Ron Simmons. So, Dave, why don't you get into Ron Simmons a little bit?
Oh, Ron Simmons also, you know, I'm not a big football guy either, but, you know, this was another dude who got into pro wrestling through football. Florida State University, jersey number 50, All-American. From what I was reading, he was almost in line for the Heisman Trophy, but I think he came in like in ninth or something like that.
Right.
Defensive tackle. He was part of the NFL, the CFL, and the United States Football League. I've never heard of the United States Football League.
The USFL was started in the early 80s when there was a strike with the NFL and a bunch of owners, that, you know, like even locally here.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
What the hell is his name? Donald Trump had a team here, too. Yeah, and he played for the Tampa Bay – well, yeah, Ron Simmons played for the Tampa Bay Bandits, which was a USFL team.
And from what I was reading, Lex Luger was a part of that team as well.
Yes. Herschel Walker actually played for the New York team, I believe.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, another Georgia native, but he went to Georgia. He didn't go to Florida State. All right, go ahead. Carry on, brother. I'm sorry.
But I don't know if there was an injury involved. Do you remember why he decided to go to wrestling?
I don't know. He finished ninth in the Heisman. He had a brief career. They didn't mention him being hurt.
Yeah, because normally when you hear about these guys making the switch to wrestling, there's usually like an injury attached to it. With Simmons, to my knowledge, there wasn't an injury. I'm sure there was to some sort of degree. Because if he was in the NFL with the Browns, and then he decides to go to the NWA, you know, there's something up. I don't know. But regardless, you know, the dude made his rounds. Where was his stomping grounds besides the NWA? The guy was in Memphis Championship Wrestling.
He got – yeah. UF. He started – well, actually, he I don't remember him in – he started in 88, I believe.
Yeah.
Was trained by Hiro Matsuda.
Mm-hmm.
He turned heel against JYD where the referee was Teddy Long, obviously. And, you know, Long was fired, kayfabed, actually, by Jim Herd.
Yeah. He was part of the UWF. That's how he got into the NWA.
I don't remember him in the UWF, though.
I found a match with him going against Yokozuna before he was Yokozuna.
Oh no, that's afterwards, dude.
This was after?
That's the newer UWF. Yeah, that wasn't
This was what was that guy's name? Why can't I remember? Herb Abrams. His UWF, right?
Was it? Yeah, but was it
afterwards? That was the one that got bought out by WCW.
He made his debut in 86, so maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he was in UWF, but he didn't get to NWA until 88. And then he, you know, again, turned on JYD and, of course, started Doom with Ron Simmons. I mean, with the Hacksaw Butch Reed, who was also in, you know. That was
former fake world champion of the NWA. Another dusty finish with Flair for Butch Reed in his past.
Yeah. Yeah. They made the debut at Halloween Havoc 89. They defeated the Steiner Brothers. They lost the Iron Man tournament in Stark 89. We talked about that on a big Christmas show.
Yeah.
They finished fourth, losing all three of their matches. They did beat the Steiners, though, for the tag team championship in Capital Combat.
Mm.
They beat some big teams. They beat the Rock and Roll Express. They feuded with the Horsemen, which, again, one of my favorite matches live was Doom against Wyndham and
Anderson.
Anderson in the cage, yeah, in 1991.
And they had the street fight, too.
They were in street clothes in that. The title reign was a street fight during Arn Anderson and Barry Windham at Starrcade 90, which is Dave was talking about. That was like a double DQ, I think. No disqualification, whatever.
No, they both pinned each other. Okay, like no Simmons pinned Anderson.
Right, Windham pinned Simmons while Reed pinned Windham pinned Simmons and Reed pinned Anderson simultaneously. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah, so it was like it was a no contest.
Doom has the distinct pleasure of being the first holders of the WCW World Tag Team Championship when the NWA seized operations when Turner finally took the company over.
Yeah, Flair was the first WCW champion, correct?
Right, right. They lost the belts to the Freebirds, and then Doom broke up, and he had a nice big feud with Reed, cage match at the very first Super Brawl. Simmons defeated
Thunder Doom Cage.
Right. Simmons
which
defeated
was just a cage.
Right. Simmons defeated Mick Carter's, including Oz, you know him better as Diesel, and the Diamond Stud, you know him better as Scott Hall. He was unsuccessful in challenging Luger when Luger was the world champ.
That was huge for me. I really loved
the two out of three falls match.
not just that, but like the whole build up, everything. It was insane. I remember they had the press conference. I forgot where the press conference was. I think it could have been like a Clash of the Champions or something. And they had these huge paintings of each of the wrestlers. Like there was like a big painting of Ron Simmons, one of Lex Luger. And this was going to be the contract signing. And, you know, everything was going according to plan. And once Lex Luger was, you know, about to sign the contract, he said something to the degree of, you know, I wish Ron Simmons the best of luck. He's a great athlete, great football player. And if he loses the match, he'll always have a job with me as my chauffeur or something like that.
Simmons went crazy.
Luger delivered it so perfectly, and Simmons just was like, what the fuck? And like throwing the table over, chaos ensues. It was just great television, in my opinion. And
I totally agree.
I don't remember if it was with Luger or if it was with Vader, but there was this other instance on WCW television, which I thought was hilarious. I think I only saw it like a few years ago too. There's an instance where Ron Simmons is in the ring. He's jaw jacking with Harley Race. And I don't remember what the specific wording was or what, but, if you pay attention to how Harley Race is mouthing his words, he calls Ron Simmons boy, but they actually bleeped it out to make it come off like he's saying the N-word. And of course Ron Simmons beats the shit out of him.
Right.
But it was just like one of those kind of moments where, you know, years after the fact, watching it on YouTube or Daily Motion or whatever, just seeing that was just like insane. Like that's like old school heat.
Right.
You know, just talking down to somebody, you know, just really disrespecting them in that sense and having them react. You know, it's a lost art. What can I say?
Well, right before that run, he spent half of 92 after the 2 out of 3 falls match at Luger. He mixed it up and had a nice big feud with Cactus Jack. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but
I don't know if it was around the 92 era, maybe 93. I know it was before Hogan came in.
Well, Hogan didn't come in until 94. But
yeah, yeah. I just remember watching an episode of WCW Pro, like late night. Like WCW was like the only organization that had like you know, like a network, like a legit, you know, broadcast network that wasn't cable showing their show, but it was on like at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning on CBS. But I remember staying up like all the time as a kid to watch it, check up on it.
Right.
And I remember seeing this fantastic Falls Count Anywhere match between Cactus Jack and Ron Simmons. And I'll never forget it. I've never seen the match since it aired. But Simmons took a fucking hammer to Cactus Jack and just laid him out and then pinned him 1, 2, 3. I'm like, wow.
Oh, that was actually the feud. It had to be the feud.
It had to be.
Right.
I don't remember all the details because it was so long ago. And I didn't have cable. I was only just watching, you know, Superstars, Pro, and Challenge, and that was it.
So now you fast forward to August, and like Dave mentioned, the press conference with it wasn't the press conference, it was the in-ring with Harley Race you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that set up the match. Well, now here's the thing. What people don't know is Sting was supposed to fight Vader for the title.
Yeah, it was actually an episode of Main Event.
Yeah, Sting.
And there was a U.S. title match between Rude and Nikita Koloff. And Sting was doing commentary during the match with Jim Ross. You know, there was like a ref bump. You know, Rude was going to get in the chair or something like that. So Sting comes down, tries to make the save. Jake the Snake comes out, ends up DDTing Sting on the chair several times. So he's out of the Main Event picture. So Bill Watts comes out with a sack of names.
right.
And picks. This was like some slim pickings. The only people that like seemed worth a shot was Rude and Simmons. The rest was like Cactus Jack, who he was still a mid-carder, Barbarian, Van Hammer. Van Hammer's not getting a world championship title shot.
Right, so
anywhere.
Right, so Sting was supposed to fight him, was canceled. Jake Roberts actually injured Sting, kayfabe. Bill Watts responds by holding a raffle. Again, though, this is genius booking because Simmons wins the raffle.
But it's just funny, the word raffle.
Right,
it's like,
yeah.
It's like at a high school.
Like a bingo hall, you know? Like my church does a fundraiser for
the potluck.
Right. We just had a potluck at my church, yeah.
The Chinese auction.
Exactly.
Look at a world championship.
That's all church-related geriatric terms, Dave. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. So Simmons has the match on August 2nd. We mentioned this. We referenced this a few times, by the way, because we love talking about it. I don't care.
Yeah, it's a fantastic match.
It is a fantastic match. Simmons does beat Vader, I believe, with a snap, with a power slam, a snap.
Yeah, because Vader was going for the power bomb. The momentum takes Simmons over. He whips Vader into the ropes. Right. Or no, he doesn't whip. Vader just whips himself into the ropes.
And then he used the snap, scoop, power slam. He wins the belt. Great moment in time. Simmons holds the belt for 5 months. Continues the feud with Cactus Jack. Jack brings in the Barbarian. At Starrcade, here's something interesting. I didn't know this. Starrcade, Simmons was supposed to wrestle Rick Rude. Rude got injured. He faced Dr. Det Steve Williams. That was a good match. That led to a double countout that was changed to a DQ when Simmons when Williams attacked him after the match. The title reign ended 2 days later when Vader defeated him again to regain.
Do you know where he lost the championship?
Do I know where in December? I'm going to say Florida, right?
No.
Baltimore.
It was in the same arena that he won the championship.
No shit.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, same arena. But, you know, this time it wasn't on main event. It was just a house show.
Wow.
Yeah, believe that.
Of course, he gets relegated to mid-card after that. He unsuccessfully challenged Dustin Rhodes for the U.S. title and Paul Orndorff for the TV title, which was on Worldwide. That was some good matches with him and Orndorff for the TV title.
Mm.
And then we mentioned his run in ECW. He fought he challenged Shane Douglas in November to Remember. Had some great matches with Tully Blanchard.
That's not on the network. I'm kind of mad. But I guess it wasn't a pay-per-view, so they're not including it.
No, not yet. It will be, though. It will be. Well, it will be.
Because those were like the best events before the pay-per-views came around. Whatever VHS tapes that they were hawking, those events were fantastic, amazing.
I just found my Hostile City Showdown from 1995 on video.
What?
Yep, that I'm gonna convert when time allows me to.
Please do.
Of course. That's actually gonna be an episode.
Oh man,
that was fucking with Rocco Rock and the double tables in the cage.
Oh my God!
Yeah, man, we're gonna have some good. I found some gems the other night going to the basement.
Wow.
Okay. Of course, he makes his WWE debut in 1996. As his first gimmick was Farooq Asad.
I had no idea what to make of this when I saw it.
Yeah, it was like a gladiator thing with a fucking.
It's like a future gladiator. I don't.
He had Sonny as a side piece. He actually won the IC title.
Mm.
No, he didn't win the IC title. I'm sorry.
That was Ahmed Johnson.
Ahmed Johnson and whatever. Then he was the Nation of Domination, which I thought was fantastic.
That was awesome. I really enjoyed the Nation.
They had some great street fights with the Road Warriors.
That's where The Rock.
That's The Rock.
Developed the Rock character in. Which I absolutely hated the dude when he was becoming The Rock. Because I was, you know, a big Ron Simmons fan for all these years. Seeing him hit Cactus Jack with a hammer, winning belts. And I really just didn't like the fact that he was kind of like second fiddle in the Nation. But, you know, youth takes over in the WWE, you know?
Yeah, and this was a sad thing because he feuded with The Rock for the IC title. And then he briefly had a tag team run with Too Cold Scorpio, which I thought was going to be a success because him and Scorpio would have made a fantastic team.
Mm.
Like, they could have been the second coming of Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson. The speed, the power, both guys can go. Scorpio still wrestles.
Still wrestles well.
Yeah, no, I know. In late 98, though, he began teaming with Bradshaw as Hell's Henchmen, the Acolytes, the Ministry, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah. At this point, I really didn't give a shit about APA or the Acolytes or any of that stuff. Like, while all that stuff was going on, I was watching. I had no idea that they even won the tag team belts. Like, somebody told me, I don't know, like 5 years ago or so, that they actually were tag team champions at that around this time. Could have fooled me.
Yeah. But, you know, like a lot of guys, Ron Simmons had a substance abuse problem.
Mm.
You know, and sadly, it's how it goes. I mean, I don't know. It's sad, but out of his recovery, we had one fantastic catchphrase, and I can play it right now. Give me 1 second. Whenever you're ready, thank you, YouTube.
Hey, Ron Simmons. Former APA, Ron Simmons.
They're addressing King Booker in the ring.
Ron Simmons doing here, King?
Got me.
Damn.
So, we got that.
Damn.
But his contribution to pro wrestling as the first African-American heavyweight champion speaks volumes. You know, there are guys now in this generation of wrestling that looked up to Ron Simmons, admitted it on TV, guys like Mark Henry, Kofi Kingston, Titus O'Neil. Those guys all made reference to Ron Simmons as their hero. And you know what? It's great. You know, I think it's fantastic. And as we're talking about this, I actually got a Facebook question regarding Ron Simmons from David Dashing. He says, if you, meaning me, Phil in quotations, had Ron Simmons in a shoot interview, what would you ask him knowing he had to answer you truthfully? Good question. I would definitely ask him about the locker room back then and how he was treated after he won the belt. I would ask him about his substance abuse problem, which I don't really know. Which I'd love to hear, and I'm sure our fans would too.
Yeah.
And I would more importantly ask him, how does he feel about being looked up to by the current, you know, African American athletes that perform in sports entertainment? And I don't want to hear the humble, like, well, I'm so happy. I want to hear his real reason. I want to hear, does it bother him? Was it added pressure? I mean, like, shit like that, you know? That's what I want to hear. So,
yeah, I think that's important to mention, too, because, you know, granted, you know, everybody's going to say that they feel great about it, but it does cause a lot of things that, you know, unneeded pressure or unneeded expectations. And it's kind of like, you know, from being a world champion, how the hell does a guy go from world champion to mid-carder? And I felt with Ron Simmons as a world champion, there was a lot of potential in that. There could have even been a Ron Simmons versus Sting match. And I think that would have been fantastic. That would have been remarkable and memorable too, you know?
I agree.
Why shoot him guys like Cactus Jack and the Barbarian? And, you know, I don't want to put down Dr. Death Steve Williams, but, you know, he wasn't one of the top guys in WCW, you know? But if he ever did face Rude, you know, at the events, you know, that would have been another feather in his cap, especially if he got the victory out of it.
I agree.
Or that could have just been a feud right there. It seemed like there was like a lot of lack of feuds going on for Ron Simmons for his world title run.
Yeah. Again, it's just one of those things where it was so significant, you know, And I don't know. I feel like it's, I don't know. I feel like it should have been, he should have had it a little longer. Not because he's black, but because he was a good talent. I don't know. Am I wrong? Or I mean,
And they were built. They've been building him up. When he finally won the title, like, this was something that was ongoing. It was ongoing since the Lex Luger thing, and they would just have, you know, for instance, Beach Blast 92. You know, before he even won the thing, they just had like a squash match, him defeating Terry Taylor, and he delivered like a little awesome speech, you know, about, you know, being the best he can be and aiming for the World Heavyweight Championship. So this is just something that they've been building and building and building, slow build, slow build, slow build. And when it finally happens, you know, it's kind of like a Chris Benoit kind of thing. You know, he finally gets his moment, but it's taken away from him within a matter of months. And you never really get to truly enjoy that world title run, you know?
Yeah. I agree. All right. Well, anything else you want to add about Ron Simmons or Ernie Ladd before we wrap this up?
No. Actually, there's something I forgot to mention during the opening part.
Go ahead.
Did you get to check out the trailer for the Piper documentary, Behind the Villain?
On WWE Network?
No. This is just something somebody's doing independent from WWE. It's just... It's its own thing.
No, do tell.
I posted the trailer for it on the main page, so you can check it out on there.
Okay.
It doesn't give too. It's just a rough cut of a trailer right now that's being tossed around. It doesn't give too many details about specifically what it's about. I'm guessing the guy just did this documentary on Piper and just followed him around. I'm not too sure if it has much to do with his wrestling history, but, you know, some of his demons are coming out throughout this trailer. There's a part where he actually, like, attacks the cameraman, you know, citing that, like, he's insulting him to some degree. And actually, Piper briefly talks about it on Austin's podcast. I think it's the second episode of the Piper interview that where he mentions it, but he only talks about it for about a minute. Austin brings it up to him and says to him like, what's the deal on the documentary? He's like, oh, I don't really want to talk about it. I'm not sure if it'll, you know, put me in a good light. And Austin's telling him like, well, that's the kind of a point of a documentary. It brings up, you know, parts of you that, you know, whether you want to talk about it or not. So I'm not sure what the deal is, but Piper said that it's going to be coming out around WrestleMania time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so take a look at the trailer if you haven't. I'll repost it again for everybody because it is pretty it's really interesting. Not sure where it's going to go, but I know Shining Wizards Eddie was saying that it was that's a work, and it's kind of, for this I'm not 100% sure because, you know, with a lot of these older dudes, you know, it's not WWE related. It's not attached to any organization or whatever. It's just something Piper's doing on his own. And, you know, I don't feel that there's anything for him to really get out of it if, you know, for it to go viral or cause any controversy or anything like that. Because, you know, the guy's caused plenty of controversy enough in his career. So I don't really think it's a work. I think that, you know, we may see sides to Piper that, you know, we've only heard about a little bit here and there because we all know that the guy had, you know, cocaine problem for years. And in Flair's book, Flair talks about how when they were over in Puerto Rico, Flair got his payment in cash and Piper got his cocaine in a bag for his payments. And that was it. So, and Piper's just one of those dudes who doesn't really talk about that kind of stuff, but it'd be interesting to see if, I don't know if there, you know, if it has affected his life down the road or something like that. I don't know.
I have so much Roddy Piper footage, Dave. I have like a 10 or 20 disc like thing on him, like all his promos and stuff like that.
Wow.
All those Piper's pits, I have them all. Mm. And I have the WWE Piper DVD. But speaking of Piper, he will be at World Premier Wrestling March the 8th in beautiful Queens, New York at the Resort Hotel Casino. I just spoke to the brass over at World Premier Wrestling yesterday, and we will be broadcasting at the event. A couple of the matches already signed. Our buddy Kevin Matthews from 2.5 Wrestlers and of Pro Wrestling Syndicate. It just came off for a successful tour of India with Sanjay Dutt, Cole Cabana. So congrats to him. He's going to be facing Matt Stryker in a rematch. There's a WPW Bombshells Championship match featuring Angelina Love, Kelly Kelly, Ashley Mazzaro, who flaked on us, Rosita, Mickey James, and Becky Bayless. A six-man elimination brawl between Lance and Noai, Brooklyn's Own Homicide, Bandito Jr., Johnny Knockout, Damien DeMonto, and the Machine Sam Shields. Our buddy Justin Credible from Shining Wizards Network takes on Malta the Damager for the Empire State Heavyweight Championship. The crew, Damien Darling and the Rockstar, will face the FBI, Little Guido and Big Vito. No DQ hardcore match between Lowlife Louis Ramos and the Almighty Sheik. The Big O will be in action. Go to WPWWrestling.com for all your ticket info and just stay on the Facebook page and keep checking the podcast for updates. We're going to have Anthony from WPW come on real quick next week on our very first live broadcast.
We're live.
March the 5th, 9 p.m. start time. Go to rantemradio.com. Click on the chat room. It's going to be interactive. We'll be taking calls. It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be a happening.
Right. We'll start playing some of this music. Start playing some of this music. There's Ron Simmons' music. Yeah, go to rantemradio.com. Go to shiningwizardsnetwork.com. We have 9 great shows up there. Shout out to all of them. Midnight Jury, Neckbreaker, 2.5 Wrestlers, Stickman, the Wolfman Jack Foley, Justin Credible's 101, the Fallen Angels, and of course our brothers in arms, the Shining Wizards. Great stuff by them lately, by the way. Check out the Rant stuff, man. What Are You Reading? The Wrestling Call-In Show. And of course the Rant every Tuesday night. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/turnbuckle throwbacks. On the tweet machine at TBuckleTbacks. Keep those entries coming in for the rebooking of
the streak.
The streak, yeah. TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com. We have t-shirts, Dave. T-shirts. Go to
ProWrestlingTees.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks.
We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on Buzzsprout. We're on Geek Life Radio every Saturday night, 9 p.m. Yeah, we're taking over. 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Check us all out there, man. That's going to do it for this week. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray. I thank you for sitting through my awful cold. Dave, anything else before we go?
No, that's it. Well, listen, tomorrow, join us on the group page for the NXT Arrival chat. We'll be talking about that as it's going down, 8 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, Dave's going to be holding that down while I'm coming home from work. So hopefully it'll be some good stuff.
Yes.
And I think that's it for us, man. On behalf of the Mega Powers, I am the gracious host, as always, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray, bidding you adieu. Wishing all you great fans, and thank you so much on the Facebook page. Take care of yourselves and each other. Avoid the clap, and get ready for next week.
Sayonara.
Peace out.
Peace.